James Hinchcliffe adorned as usual with logos everywhere.
That's very subtle, James.
Yeah, you know, the billboard shirt.
And Robert Wickens with no logos, not a single one. Good for you.
I got to earn my stripes, I guess.
We kind of like Rob better now.
Yeah, fair. So do I. I'm super jealous.
Can't grow a beard, but I'm logo free.
Tell us about your new Cumbado here.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robert Wickens, he was announced this morning as my teammate for the foreseeable future at Schmidt Peterson Motorsports. They announced my multi-year extension and a multi-year deal with Robbie here. And Robbie and I, we go way back. We started racing go-karts together when I think Robbie was like 12 or 13. We raced together as teammates in karts and in cars a little bit, kind of in the junior categories. He spent the last decade over in Europe, the last 6 years being a factory driver for Mercedes-Benz over in a German touring car series called DTM. And we finally managed to coax him back to this side of the pond and get him in an IndyCar, which we're all pretty excited about.
I assume you're excited?
I'm very excited, yeah.
How different do you expect it to be? I mean, I assume you've been in these cars before, once or twice.
Two times, yeah.
Exactly twice. Yeah. Twice?
Two times, and yeah. Actually for a total of, 4 hours, probably. So, to be honest, expectations haven't really sunken in yet. I mean, the biggest thing that's going to throw me for a learning curve is probably driving on an oval, because I've never done that before in my entire life. So
turn left.
Yeah, I mean, on paper it sounds really easy, but I'm sure that it's going to be a massive learning curve and something that you have to respect a lot, because the consequences are pretty severe if you get it wrong.
So why would you come back? I mean, respectfully, where car racing is in North America versus where it is at times in Europe, I mean, you'd be a bigger star in Europe, wouldn't you be?
He just missed me so much.
James was begging and begging and begging.
Please come back.
No, I mean, honestly, IndyCar has been on my radar my entire life. As a kid, I grew up, watching Canadians like Greg Moore, Paul Tracy, Patrick Carpentier, Alex Tagliani, Jacques Villeneuve. The list goes on of, great North American superstars that were all Canadian. And as a kid, my lifetime dream was to race an IndyCar. And then that soon changed to Formula One, because as a kid, you can't really make up your mind of what you want to do.
Yeah.
But and then I was fortunate enough, picked up by Red Bull at 16 and got shipped off to Europe and been over there pursuing the F1 dream, fell just short of that, and got signed by Mercedes and DTM. And the main thing that brought me back to North America was honestly Mercedes announcing that they were leaving DTM at the end of the 2018 season. So I started looking for work, and the timing's right to leave a year early. And to join IndyCar, because with the new aero package that they have, it's kind of a level playing field for everyone who would enter. So as a rookie in IndyCar, I think 2018 is the right time to jump in.
How different is he going to find this move to IndyCar? How different are the cars?
They are quite different, but what's important to remember is that until he got to DTM, all of his formative and junior career was in an open wheel. So he's got as much, probably more, open wheel experience if he add it all up than he does touring car experience. So it's almost like coming home for him. As he said, the ovals are going to be the big challenge. It's the one thing he hasn't done yet, but a driver of his caliber will pick it up quickly. He grew up watching IndyCars race around oval racing, and as silly as it sounds, even just watching it as a kid and kind of understanding the ebb and flow of races a little bit, even just from the spectator's point of view, already gives you a leg up over someone that was maybe born and raised in Europe and never really paid attention to it.
So just for the uninitiated, DTM would be AAA baseball, would be like the level just below F1. It's the Deutsche Touring Wagen?
Yep. English Masters. Is German touring cars.
Okay.
Just to
put that in terms of level versus, people in North America understand AA, AAA, AHL.
Yeah,
what is it?
I would honestly classify it as, let's say we have the NHL here in North America.
Sure.
And that could be IndyCar or Formula One or whichever you want to call it. DTM would be the KHL.
Okay, so it's a competing league, really, in many ways.
Yes and no. It's more like a parallel. It's a pinnacle of motorsport, of touring car racing, where IndyCar would be the pinnacle of open wheel racing in North America. Formula One is known as kind of the world pinnacle of motorsport, where it's the highest level of motorsport that you can ever achieve. Where DTM is, yeah, I would say the pinnacle of touring car racing. So it's slightly different style of racing. It's a little more robust, you know, a little bit of contact here and there. It's a closed wheel car, so you can get a kind of like bump around a little bit, not to the extent of what you would see in a NASCAR race, but they can get pretty rough sometimes.
Well, let's talk about that. So everybody is familiar with, you know, closed wheel racing, driving. Mm-hmm. I have done about 10 laps in an open wheel car, a Formula 2000 car up at Mosport.
Yeah.
And it was about power for me and the fact I couldn't move in the damn car because they strap you in so tight.
A little claustrophobic.
Yeah. So, I never really had enough opportunity to do enough to judge the difference in the way the car handled as opposed to my street car. And I got a pretty fast street car too. So, you know, I'm sort of familiar with.
What'd you get?
Well, I've got a Jag.
Okay.
And it's pretty quick.
F-Type?
What the hell is it? Is it? It's a...
Don't look at me. It's not my car.
It's 515 horsepower.
Hi.
It's the Jag sports car.
Yes, supercharged.
Two-seater.
Yeah. So, but what's the fundamental difference as a driver that he's going to have to adjust to or come to understand the difference between closed wheel and open wheel driving?
I mean, just
how does a car handle differently?
Right. So just driving around by yourself, one of the big things about IndyCars is, you know, the aerodynamics. In DTM, they spend a lot of time in the wind tunnel. The aerodynamics are very advanced, but the rules are simply they allow the car to have more downforce in an open wheel car. So it's the kind of higher speed corners, faster stuff that'll be a bigger difference. Car's a little bit lighter, maybe a little bit more nimble in certain situations. Just kind of being that layout, single seater, open wheel, you know, yeah. A bit lighter. But at the end of the day, and this is actually, it's a quote of his from earlier in the day, a race car is a race car and a racetrack's a racetrack. And at the end of the day, what we're trained to do is adapt to different situations, whether it's cold temperatures, warm temperatures, raining temperatures, high downforce track, low downforce track, street circuit, whatever it is, you know, we have to learn to adapt at all times, even during a race, light fuel and new tire or old tires versus full fuel and new tires. So adaptation is it comes with the territory. And so he'll jump in. There'll be a few things that are a little foreign at first, but he'll adapt quickly and he'll be right up to speed.
You guys keep track of when you race each other, who wins?
I don't personally have a ticker going.
I haven't. I mean, we raced the Atlantic Championship together in 07,
yep.
And you finished third in the championship and I finished fourth. So that's the only one
check.
That I know.
Never
so he's got one up on me.
And so how do for the uninitiated, how do teammates work in IndyCar? I mean, because last I checked, only one of you can win.
Yeah, you're racing against each other, but I mean, you're racing for the same team. So, you know, you're mindful of where each other is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think, James obviously knows more about how a teammate works in IndyCar than I do. But, you know, in motorsports, it's a weird kind of conundrum that you have because your direct competition is effectively your teammate.
Yes.
Right? And your direct comparison is your teammate because that's the same, exactly the same car, same team, same situation
same
that you're in.
Same mechanics?
Yeah, same level of prep, same yep. engineering.
Like they'll be prepped the same way by the same caliber of people, not actually the same mechanics, but okay. There'll be the, you know, I'll have my crew, he'll have his crew. But in terms of how you evaluate a driver on how they did in a season, you more or less directly compare it to your teammate. So it's a weird situation where you have to work together to achieve a great result because you can't do it on your own. But then also in motorsports, it's that thing where, you know, you kind of always want to beat your teammate and you're trying to always like sneak that one up on them. But I mean, I think this situation's a bit different for me because I'm so new into IndyCar and James is a bit of a ledge as they call it. But no, I'm just looking forward to working with him, learning from him, and then we'll see how it goes.
The fact of the matter is until Sunday afternoon, your teammate's actually your biggest asset because practice time is so limited on a race weekend.
Yeah, so and, you learn from him and he learns from you.
Right. So engineers, God bless them, will come up with enough changes to fill up 5 days of running and you have about 2 hours of running. And so the most efficient way to do it is split those duties up. He tries some things, I'll try some other. At the end of a session, we'll compare notes, take the best of both worlds, go on to the next session. Mm-hmm. And so you really do rely on your teammate to help make your car and your situation better. Come Sunday, you know, as Robbie says, I mean, you want to beat everybody, your teammate included. But up until that point in the race, or in the weekend rather, it's a huge asset.
So are we talking, I mean, I think we're sort of talking about two things here, but When you go to practice, is your setup different from his deliberately?
Generally, what we'll do is we will start with the exact same setup for the first run. So we'll go out and we'll take the driver feedback from each. And as long as we're both saying the same things, it's like, okay, let's get into the plan. And so from that base car, they'll put me on a certain series of changes. They'll put Robbie on a certain series of changes in different areas of the car.
Okay.
So that way, so let's say he's doing dampers and I'm doing aero. So at the end of that weekend, we'll take the best aero configuration, combine it with the best damper configuration, and we'll start the next session with that same car that we've both kind of developed from practice one. We'll do the same thing in practice two, same thing in practice three.
So this is all technology we're talking about. We're not talking about race strategy or lines on corners and things like that.
There's an element of that as well, for sure, because there are different corners that Robbie might just pick up quicker than me or vice versa. So we look at each other's, you know, speed traces, braking, things like that. And
there's always different styles of how to approach a corner.
And technology would be tested and changed over a week. Why? Because tracks are different? Because environment is different?
Tracks are different. Conditions are different. You know, racing cars are, they're very sensitive, very fickle beasts. And so you can have a setup
that... Not as bad as an F1, though. F1's got to be worse than that.
They're very similar.
Okay.
Yeah, very similar in terms of, you know, there's some times where the thing about racing is the tire is the most important part. And if you can't make the tire work properly, your weekend will be a disaster. And if it's slightly colder or slightly warmer, the tire will all behave differently. So you have to tune the setup effectively to aid the tire all the time. And that's where you'll keep on hearing of cars or teams that are like, oh, we have a great qualifying car, but our race car is not that good. And then in simpleton terms, that means we're using the tire way too much. It's really fast over one lap, but then it's not good over a duration of time. So that's where you get the fine balance of trying to, you know, get to the bottom of everything. But I mean, yeah, I mean, even from year to year, you'll go to the same track, but the car will handle completely different because it's just the asphalt might be 1 year older. There might be a new bump that wasn't there before, and the whole car gets thrown a mess, basically.
It could have been a series that ran the weekend before that has a very different tire compound that doesn't work well with your tire compound. And so, you know, a setup that worked well the year before, you could maybe throw it out the window when you get there the following season. It might be completely different.
Do you change the pressure in the tires at all?
All the time, very regularly.
I mean, I'm trying to think of things you can do to a tire in order to accommodate the conditions or, I mean, I know you have different tires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you have a tire, a standard tire, you're on a dry track, you know, you got slicks on, what can you do to that tire? Because you're talking about...
How warm is it? How warm is the weather? That's a factor too, right?
It's a huge factor. Sure. It's a huge factor. I mean, all you can physically do to the tire essentially is tire pressure, but there's a lot of things mechanically you can do to the car that affects the way the car transfers energy into the tire, whether it's the dampers, the toes, the cambers, all these different mechanical changes you can make to the car will affect how the tire performs essentially.
How much of it is driver preference and or at all?
Drivers got nothing to do with it. It's all, they drive themselves pretty much.
Yeah.
We have a button on the steering wheel.
Yeah, it's basically a video game. It's anybody can do it.
You just turn it a little bit.
No, it's funny though. But drive that's a big thing. It's like if you want to relate it to hockey, the way like a certain guy likes his skates a certain way and his stick curved a certain way or wrapped a certain way. It's kind of the same thing. Every driver's got a different technique. It might require a different kind of setup or slight little differences.
So the notion of IndyCar racing is that, and I think you mentioned this earlier, that the cars are as identical as you can get them, correct?
Pretty much, yeah.
Not so in F1. F1, far more technology, far more room for experimentation and et cetera, et cetera. So what's the difference between winning and losing if it has nothing to do with you, Hinchcliffe?
Well,
you've already acknowledged.
So 100%. Everybody knows this. It's fine.
So clearly I could do what you do.
Oh, 100%.
All right.
You can try to do it better.
Except you can't fit into the...
Well,
that's an issue, but...
And this is the funny thing about it, you know, and this is, I think, one of the things that always attracted Robbie and I to IndyCar racing over Formula One is the disparity between teams in F1 is huge.
Sure.
And so on a given... If you're a midfield team on a given day, you wake up on a Sunday and... Or given week, sorry, and... you know that like a 12th is a win. Like that is almost winning for you. Your scale of what is, you know, a successful weekend shifts dramatically. That's not how we're built. I can't get up and motivate myself to finish 12th every day. In an IndyCar, every single car that starts that race has an opportunity to win legitimately. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not just me saying. Some obviously more than others, but the way yellow flags fall and pit strategy and just the general level of competitiveness between the teams, any guy can win a race. And that's just so much more appealing for a driver waking up every Sunday knowing that he's got a chance at winning.
So, you know, I'm trying to get to a point where I understand the fundamental difference between winning and finishing 20th. I don't want to believe it's all the car.
For sure not.
How do you know? Do you have a feeling during a race? Is it all about your starting position? What's the key factor in deciding whether you finish 20th or finish first?
I think if a driver knew the key, they'd probably win every year. I mean, the biggest thing, you know, track position is always important in racing. So qualifying is extremely important. I mean, James might know more than I do on the whole IndyCar front, but, you know, your pit strategy that your team and yourself will agree on before the race.
Sure, if your crew screws up in the pits, you're probably not going
to
win.
But even if you want to do a two-stop race or a three-stop race or whatever the case, and then as a driver, everyone has to be on board to the same plan. And you have, let's say if you're running a three-pit-stop race, you know that you have to drive hard the whole race because you're not saving fuel, you're not saving your tires, where if you want to try stretch a two-stop, you have to more or less drive slowly the whole time to nurse your car.
Better chance of running out of gas with a two-stop, right?
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah.
The fact is there is no key. There is no one thing, right? It's you've got to drive as a driver very well. You've got to make no mistakes. The car has to be set up perfectly for those conditions in that day. The strategy has to be called perfectly. You can't have a yellow flag come out at the wrong time. You can't be hit by someone else on track. Your crew can't make a mistake in pit lane. There's no one key. The key is perfection. Mm-hmm. The key is executing with perfection. The guy that does that the best or comes the closest to that is usually the car that ends up winning.
When you're back, and Rob, you're back in the cars when?
Technically my first time in the IndyCar will be early December.
And that's in Florida, I would think?
Yes.
Yep.
At home, is that home still Homestead? Or is
Sebring.
It?
Sebring.
Okay. Oh, it's Sebring. Wow.
Yeah.
Does that matter?
That bustling metropolis of Sebring. Yeah.
Does that matter? Does it matter what track you're on? In terms of practice?
It changes things, because Sebring is kind of a very raw, bumpy track. So it's more of a preparation for a street race, you know, a race like what we would have in Toronto or St. Petersburg, Long Beach, all kind of bumpy roads, effectively. And then, you know, there's other tracks you go to that'll be smoother, like they just finished a test in Mid-Ohio, which is more of a permanent racetrack. So it'll be
a
lot smoother. So that car will actually handle different. You'll run different dampers, different spring setups, and et cetera for those races. So it does make a difference what track you drive on. So
what's the difference? I mean, he's raced all the tracks. I don't know. Have you got any new stops this year? Any new circuits?
We're going to Portland, actually, that just announced, which Robbie and I both actually raced on in the junior category.
Street course?
Permanent road course.
Oh, okay.
Up in Portland. So never in an Indy car, but have been there in other cars.
But you know every track.
Yes.
It's etched in your memory. It may take you a nanosecond to go, okay, I remember this one. Mm-hmm. And now you know where every turn is and when to accelerate and what your lines are and everything. How much of a learning curve is that going to be for you?
It's going to be steep. I mean, the best thing that I have for me is that Schmidt's a very strong team. I have my buddy Hinch here beside me who has done every track and is very experienced, so I can pick his brains on lines, what gear in this corner, what gear in that corner. But the big thing for me is I'm going to be spending a lot of time on simulators and a lot of time.
I was just going to ask you if you do simulators.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I
just for course memory,
I'm
right?
building one at home.
Oh, are you?
Just for some online gaming, nothing extreme. But,
okay.
But then we have a proper work simulator, where I'll probably be spending a lot of time ahead of every weekend to make sure I'm as prepared as possible.
James, do you visualize?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually worked. I worked with a mental coach for a bunch of years when I was younger in the junior categories, and definitely techniques like that were utilized a lot. And racing's a very, very mental sport. It really is. And I think athletes at all levels of all sports do things like that. So it is when we're super limited on how much we get to practice. You know, it's not like, you know, if you play basketball and you suck at three-pointers, you can grab a basketball, go to any court anywhere in the country.
Yeah, and work on it.
Right, and work on it. Yep. We don't get to do that. We're by rules. We're limited to how many test days we can do. Mm-hmm. And so things like sim work and things like visualization become a big part of our toolbox.
Do you take, I think we've talked about this before. Do you take subliminally or otherwise any of the things that you do on the track onto the street with you in your own car? And I don't mean go fast.
No, know? I mean, it's funny.
You do though. Like on an exit off the highway, you make sure you hit an apex. You're not just like.
I was gonna say.
No, it's more for me. Well, I mean, you definitely do that. I'm not gonna say that. But for me, it's more watching other cars. Driving on the road terrifies me.
Yeah, because everybody else is there and you don't trust them.
Why would I trust any?
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know a single person on the road. Yeah. When I go on the racetrack, I know that all 20-something of us have dedicated our lives to this craft. Our professionals know how they will behave roughly in a given scenario.
Yeah.
Any jerk can jump in a car and be texting or be drunk or whatever. And the main difference between us and non-racing drivers is I've hit something going 50 kilometers an hour. I've hit something going 100. I've hit something going 100. I've hit something going 350 kilometers
an hour. Yeah, we know.
I know how much that hurts.
You don't want to do that.
I know that you really don't want to do it. Like it's fascinating to me how blasé people are about driving road cars sometimes, because that's still a 5,000-pound weapon hurling down the road at 130 kilometers an hour. That's a big deal.
Do you think driving tests should be more stringent?
Probably.
Absolutely. I also think skid school should be mandatory for every driver.
Yeah. It is in Europe.
Is that right? You have to go to skid school?
In Germany, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. They have to do a
I don't know why. I skid all the time.
And no. he's still there. So he's doing something, right?
In and out of a car.
Oh, yeah.
But like, because, well, with Germany, with like the Autobahn and all that stuff.
Sure. No speed limit, right?
Yeah. So it like has to be respected and taken seriously. So it's a long, like, you can't get your full like road license in Germany until you're like almost 18.
Wow.
You know, stupid things, because things are flashing back now, because when I went and did Formula 2000, I mean, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. They give you like an hour course and whatever. And the one thing that jumped out at me that should have been really obvious was you break into the corner and you accelerate through the corner, mm-hmm. right? And for so many of us, as a street driver, you don't think about doing it that way. And now I'm in my car. Every time I put that flicker on, I go, okay, here we go. So we're going to brake before we get to the turn, and then we're going to accelerate through the turn to get the weight to the back of the car.
And how much better does the car feel?
Oh, fantastic.
You see it all the time, especially on off-ramps. People that indicate into the lane, they get into the lane, and they don't hit the brakes until they get to the corner, and they're braking the whole way around, and they kind of slide out to the...
Then you're yelling at them.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You're like trying to backseat drive.
By the way, but we have a picture of Rob and James. I think, James, you posted today, right, boys?
We got it on... we can put it up on the screen?
I think so.
Okay.
There they are.
There it is.
Oh, how old are you?
Look at those champions.
Oh, my goodness.
Man. Couple of snot-nosed punks.
Absolutely. At least, well, you've got better style now. I'm pretty much the same. I'm still wearing a branded shirt, but luckily I lost those sunglasses, so I think I'm wearing the same shirt.
Have you ever worn a shirt without a logo on it, Hinch?
Not since I was 12 years old.
They're free, too. Come on now.
Why he's doing it.
Hey, Robert, congratulations. Great to see you.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Guelph boy, right?
Yes.
Yep. And we wish you good luck in the upcoming season. Hinch, we've seen you lots, and we'll see you lots more, we hope.
Yes, sir.
Have a good off season and a safe 2018, too.